Hey there, it's Joshua. This is another installment in our series of shows suggested by you. Check your podcast feed for more episodes, and to suggest your own idea, go online to the1a.org and click Ask 1A. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC for short, has been around since 1973. Even if you're not sure what ALEC does, chances are you may have been impacted by laws it's helped pass at the state level. Nearly a quarter of all state lawmakers are members of ALEC, and over the years, the group has helped usher in laws including mandatory minimum sentences, California's three strikes law, and stand your ground. ALEC prides itself on being a meeting place for ideas to be discussed and exchanged for the betterment of the American people. Critics call ALEC a secretive lobby for corporate interests to bypass the will of the people. 1A listener Tom Macon wanted to know what ALEC really is, what it really does, and what impact, if any, it may be having on our democracy. Joining us in studio to discuss it is Shelby Emmett, the director of the Center for Free Speech at ALEC. Shelby, welcome to 1A.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
And joining us via Skype is Lisa Graves, the co-director of Documented, an organization that investigates corporate involvement in public policy. She's also the former deputy assistant attorney general in the Office of Legal Policy and the Office of Policy Development during the Clinton and George W. Bush administrations. Lisa, welcome.
Thank you, Joshua, for having me on.
Shelby, let me start with you and just some basic information. First of all, what is ALEC?
Sure. So the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, A-L-E-C, is a member organization comprised of public sector members at the state level and also private sector members. We also work with nonprofit organizations. The whole point of ALEC is to bring ideas together from across the states in order to develop public policy solutions to today's problems. So we all meet. We have about 2 to 3 meetings a year. Usually the most common way is legislators will introduce a model, usually from their own state, something that's passed, something that's worked well, or they just want to see debated within the broader organization. Then those ideas are debated, sometimes amendments are made, and then that becomes quote-unquote official ALEC model policy. Before these things are even passed, there are our meetings. We actually post everything right online at ALEC.org. You can see everything there. And then right afterwards, when we're finished with the meeting, like our past meeting in November, we then vote on everything. It's passed, and then we put it right up on our website for everyone to see. So you can go right onto our main page right now and see all of those models that were passed.
So just to summarize, the idea is that lawmakers say, hey, here's something that worked in my state. Might this work in your state? And then ALEC helps bring people together to figure out how policies that the group approves, that it votes on, might be applied to other states. Is that it?
Exactly. So, for example, we have different task forces that we operate much like a Congress. We have a criminal justice task force. We have a civil justice task force. We have health and human services, education. And then we also have centers that operate more like think tanks within the organization. So I run our free speech center. So my job is to help educate lawmakers and public officials on the First Amendment to make sure that they're staying in their lane, because that's what the First Amendment does. It restricts them, not the people. And we handle multiple different issues. So states are supposed to be marketplaces for innovation so they can compete, see what works, see what doesn't work. Maybe a state, I'm from Michigan originally, so maybe a state that just went through a really bad problem like a recession, maybe another state starting to experience that, and they can come together and talk things out about what worked and didn't.
Before I get to Lisa, let me get a little more basic information from you, Shelby. You mentioned that your members are public sector, private sector, and nonprofits, was it?
Yes.
Who are some of the private sector members?
We just have tons of different organizations and companies all over the spectrum. So anywhere from communications to education fields to environment to everything. So the whole point is to bring together people from all over the spectrum, because of course public and private individuals are what make our system work, and so we bring them all together.
Give us a sense of the state lawmakers who are members of ALEC. Are there any like requirements for joining, or can any state lawmaker join, or how does a lawmaker become a member of ALEC?
Sure. So ALEC is open to all state lawmakers. We're nonpartisan. We're open to Democrats and Republicans. We have Republicans, we have Democrats, and it's very similar almost to like the National Council of State Legislators. It's you bring lawmakers together, and it's just open to all state officials. So,
what is your sense, Lisa, of the public awareness, the public perception of ALEC? Is this a group that gets a lot of attention, or would you guess that most people are not really aware of it?
Well, I think that ALEC has increased its notoriety over the years, in part due to some of the extreme policies that it has pushed, but also it's been profiled in a number of documentaries because of the damage that it has done to public policy in the states and nationally. And so I think there's greater awareness of ALEC than when I helped launch ALEC Exposed about 8 years ago. The presentation of ALEC as this body of lawmakers really overlooks the portions of ALEC that aren't broadcast to the public, where the press is kept out. For example, in those task force meetings, we know from open records requests that corporations, corporate lobbyists, vote as equals with lawmakers on those bills before they become ALEC models approved by that task force. In many instances, those bills actually originate from corporate lobbyists, although ALEC has in recent years taken to removing the logo branding that used to be on those bills. You know, what you see in recent years is a sort of polished PR campaign to try to present ALEC in a different light. In reality, what ALEC does is give, you know, sort of one-stop shopping for corporate lobbyists and special interest groups to vote on bills that they want. And so it really is a corporate lobbying operation, a pay-to-play operation.
Before I give Shelby a chance to respond, can I just clarify from you, Lisa, when you're talking about extreme policies, what are you referring to specifically? Can you give me an example?
Well, interestingly, one of the recent efforts of ALEC is to repeal the direct election of senators. That's a new piece. But ALEC has a lot of bills that are pretty extreme. ALEC, for many years, was pushing the NRA's position on guns to repeal the assault weapons ban and more. ALEC has a long history of, you know, other measures that are, you know, very damaging to the public. They are the ones who really lifted up the voter ID restrictions after the 2008 elections to make it harder for Americans to vote. And ALEC was the real force in the states in privatizing our prison system, where most prisoners go through the state criminal justice system.
All right, Shelby, let me give you a chance to respond.
Sure. Well, first, I just want to say, I think it's pretty unfortunate that you would use words like extreme to describe an organization that's committed to limited government, free markets, and federalism. Some of the great things that we've worked on, for example, I don't know how you would ever call free speech extreme. My job is to help protect and ensure that your right and my right to speak is protected. We also have done great things like occupational licensing reform. So people that maybe went through the criminal justice system and are barred from entering certain occupations now have a second opportunity to embrace everything that this country can offer to somebody. And we believe in second chances. A lot of those policies started as original ALEC model bills and started in the states. So I think it's pretty disheartening to hear such rhetoric, like extreme. All this is an organization that's committed to basic principles of free markets, limited government, and federalism. And that just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, but I think you do see the concern, Shelby, that some folks like Lisa, and I'm sure others, have about the potential for this organization that they may not know about. And of course, you know, what you fear what you don't understand, but the potential of this organization that brings together lawmakers and business interests and nonprofits in ways that seem opaque to write laws, as opposed to just me as a citizen of a state believing that the only person who's influencing my laws is my lawmaker.
Well, I do want to correct you on that. So ALEC does not write laws. We have members that introduce model policy that then becomes ALEC model policy. That's all there. At the end of the day,
semantic, though? I mean,
no,
if you're writing
not
policy that turns into a law, you're creating the essence of it.
Well, no, because at the end of the day, this still has to go through your state legislative process. If a member chooses to support any model policy that you see, they introduce it in their state legislature. It goes through their committee process. The American people, the citizens of that state, are a part of that committee process. They can go to every hearing. You can go onto any state legislative website and see bills that are drafted right now.
I want to talk a little bit more about that interface between ALEC and lawmakers, which is part of the point of the hour when we continue. I'm Joshua Johnson. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI. REI believes that a life outdoors is a life well lived, and they have for 80 years. So check out their podcast, Wild Ideas Worth Living, for inspiring stories of people who took the road less traveled. Hear from explorers, athletes, authors, and experts in the field. Follow how they're taking wild ideas and making them a reality every day. Find it on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. If you're a normal Wait, Wait listener, you shout out the answers to all the questions, and then you get frustrated that no one can tell how smart you are. Here's the solution, the Wait, Wait quiz, available now on your smart speaker. Just ask your smart speaker to open the Wait, Wait quiz. Finally, your genius shall be recognized.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. Dan tweeted, private sector representatives should not have a seat at the table when determining public policy. Shelby, would you react to Dan?
So first and foremost, of course they should. Private companies are just as much part of our everyday communities as public officials, if not more. I can't think of someone else more better to talk about what's facing businesses, what they may need, what struggles they're having, what could be done better. Someone who's been in government their entire life as a lawmaker for 40, 50 years doesn't understand the modern times like a business person does. But let's also remember your federal government, the actual people that are passing laws in the state level at the same time, they're also meeting with private sector members every day. The people that passed the Affordable Care Act met with the healthcare industry every single day, and they should, because the whole point is people in government don't necessarily have the answers to everything. When you bring together diverse ideas and different perspectives, you get to the best solutions.
Where does Alec draw the line, though, Shelby, in terms of the appropriate place for the private sector in that conversation? I hear what you're saying. I mean, if you are setting a law or regulation that affects businesses, you know, there are businesses, including small businesses, who might say, hey, here's something you might want to consider. Where is the line, as Alec sees it, between the proper place of businesses, of the private sector, in setting policy and overreach? Where is that zone?
So within our organization, internally within our procedures, it's the public sector members that introduce the legislation. Within, obviously, the formal proceeding, if a bill is then introduced, then each state operates with its own levels of transparency. So states all over the country, for example, have ethics laws and reporting for different lobbyists, the same thing that happens at the federal level. So there's already laws around things like campaign finance and all of those great things. But within the organization, private and public sectors come together, but it's the public sector members that actually introduce the policy.
Lisa, how do you see it?
Well, what we know is that the corporations vote as equals with the politicians in those ALEC task force meetings. And we know that in many instances, those bills come out of ALEC and they're introduced in state houses and rushed through with very little input from the actual citizens of that state. We saw that time and time again after the 2010 elections when ALEC majorities took over different state houses. And you saw that with the bills attacking the rights of labor unions and more, changes to rules for torts, where basically the ALEC legislators went back charged with this legislation that the corporations wanted pursued, and they pushed them through often with little notice, if any notice, and very few hearings. ALEC caters to the climate change denial machine. Basically, it has elevated the positions of the Heartland Institute. That's the group that basically equated people who believe that climate change is happening with the Unabomber. That's in part how it lost Exxon as a member last year over the efforts to basically change the rules for regulating carbon in this country.
I'm sorry, that's a part of how Heartland lost Exxon as a member last year, right?
How ALEC lost Exxon as a member this past year. And then this past summer, ALEC featured David Horowitz in not one but two panels. Horowitz is infamous for basically saying that Obama is a secret Muslim and other really hateful claims. And after that, Verizon left ALEC along with a number of other corporations.
Okay.
So, you know, they can tell you that they don't represent an extreme position, but in fact, they do in many, many instances.
I hear you in terms of your concerns about industry and legislators working arm in arm to make policies that, in your view, are extreme. I wonder how you see, and we'll get more into this in a minute, but see the public involved in this. I mean, even if ALEC wrote a bill verbatim that a lawmaker introduced and it became law, if it upset enough people, isn't it on us to vote that person out?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you would raise that, because one of the things ALEC did after the 2010 election was hold secret sessions with ALEC legislators to help them implement new computer algorithms to change the districting in those states. And so what you've had in the past few years is a number of ALEC legislators who have rewritten their own district lines to make themselves safer from public disapproval and more than willing to push this extreme agenda of ALEC. Once ALEC makes it a standard or a national model for those legislators, in many states, they just ram those bills right through, and the public citizens are left to the side.
Why does ALEC have so much sway with so many lawmakers?
What it does is it provides for a steady stream of contact through these two or three meetings a year with these legislators and these lobbyists, where they're wined and dined or schmoozed and boozed at ALEC meetings. In many instances, those lobbyists are their mainstay campaign contributors to, you know, max out in their state limits for those elected representatives. The PACs of some of those corporations are their mainstays for their fundraising. And so it creates a long-term relationship that helps build and solidify those relationships for these ALEC meetings, or in essence, vacations, where these lawmakers are hanging out with these lobbyists and building those relationships in ways that are different than in the state, where they might have restrictions or disclosures that ALEC basically says don't apply to it because it claims it does no lobbying and it's not a lobbying organization.
Shelby, it sounds like Lisa is expressing concerns that this is ultimately just about money, that this is corporations that find lawmakers that they can influence to get what they want, and the benefit is through campaign contributions or donations down the line, or maybe even in the shorter term, and that feeds a desire or gives more reason to do some of ALEC's business in public, but some of it in private, where the public doesn't really have enough knowledge of what's going on.
Well, sure. So there's a lot to digest there. But first, I'll say it seems like the criticism is that, I guess, people have a problem with business being part of the public discussion and within the public square. And I think that's pretty sad.
Well, I think the problem is with people not knowing how much business is part of the public discussion.
With that point, though, that's also just doesn't make quite much sense to those of us within the organization. So like I said before, one, all of our meetings are publicly posted on our website. You can go and you can buy a ticket. You can register. We invite media all the time. So I'll just say right here and right now, you should come to our next ALEC meeting. I think it's in Austin in August. At the end of the day, we are no different than so many other organizations, nonprofits that have meetings and conferences and forums and panels and work with business leaders and businesses all across the country. So I just don't see what the difference is there.
Well, but if you invited me to an ALEC conference, I'd go. I mean,
should come. We're going to Austin. It'll be great.
But I know that wherever I am in Austin is not where these private meetings will be, because they're private. So there's the part that I see as a journalist, and I know there's also this other part that I won't see because I'm not allowed to go, because I'm not told. I mean, if there is something private, that's the whole point of keeping it private, is so that I can't see it.
Well, not necessarily. So, like I said, we all have task forces and task force directors, and there's been quite a few meetings where we've worked with members and we've said, hey, you know, we would love to have these people come in so they can see what's going on and be part of the conversation. So I would just encourage you to reach out early and, you know, we can see what we can do with those particular meetings. Outside of that, though, I do want to address this idea that things are rushed through at the state level. That's just wrong. So first of all, let's remember that all of these bills are always posted online. As an individual, you can register with different websites that will give you different models and different bills that are being introduced. And then you should be engaged and contact your lawmakers and let them know how you feel about these things. So none of this is rushed through. None of this is done under the cover of darkness. And quite frankly, a lot of the things that have been brought up have been from years ago. We're talking about 2012, and we're not talking about the future and what we're doing right now and the great work that we are doing.
What about the point that Lisa brought up in terms of ALEC being classified as a nonprofit rather than as a lobbying organization? This would seem to be highly material to the conversation in terms of the amount of oversight of an organization, where the money goes, where it can come from, and the amount of access it's allowed to have to lawmakers. Shelby, can you clarify, what is ALEC? Is it a lobbying organization?
Of course. So we are a C3.
A 501c3, that part of the tax code that governs nonprofits. NPR is a 501c3.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So we have ALEC, which is our C3, and then we do have ALEC Action, which is our C4, which, again, so many other organizations also have. You have, for example, Planned Parenthood as a C3 and a C4 side as well. Multiple organizations do. So, all of those of us on staff who are part of ALEC staff, we are on the C3 side, and then we also have a C4 side that is run on the C4 side. So we follow everything that we're supposed to follow, and we follow and play by the rules.
Lisa, what about that in terms of ALEC being classified as a 501c3? I mean, it occurs to me that a number of organizations are 501c3s that might surprise people. Another 501c3 that was ruled a 501c3 in the same year as ALEC in 1973 was parts of the NFL. The NFL Foundation is classified as a 501c3. The National Organization has some nonprofit protections. That may seem odd to the public, but I wonder if that's ALEC's responsibility or our responsibility in terms of the way the group is regulated.
Well, ALEC has only recently added a C4. For the bulk of its history, for decades, it operated as a C3, and it told the IRS it engaged in zero lobbying while it basically touted all the bills that it passed. In fact, it bragged over and over that nearly 20% of its bills were enacted every single year on average, and it really was engaged in extensive lobbying to push those bills forward. That really is its primary purpose, to put those bills forward to get them into law. And I would say, on this question of the task forces and going to the task force meetings versus the public portions they broadcast, you know, just take a look at Dana Milbank's column about his invitation to attend a task force and what happened when he was blocked, because ALEC doesn't want the public to see or hear the corporations voting as equals with the lawmakers. And in fact, you know, it's quite clear. You can see it in state after state. You can look up almost any state newspaper and see how that ALEC agenda moved in those states with very little notice, in many instances, very few hearings. And Bill Moyers actually did a great documentary on it called United States of ALEC, which really showcased how little public input there is into the ALEC agenda once it becomes a priority for these corporations and for ALEC.
Another documentary that touched on ALEC was 13th, the documentary by Ava DuVernay about the nature of America's prison systems. For a lot of people, the first time they heard of ALEC was after the incident with Trayvon Martin in Florida, after he was killed by George Zimmerman. The documentary 13th, which is on Netflix, touched on this topic. Here is part of what was said in 13th.
Tonight, a deadly shooting in Sanford. Police have the gun, they've got the shooter, but they have not arrested him.
George Zimmerman, armed with a gun, followed this quote-unquote suspicious kid after the dispatcher told him not to. They ended up on the ground in a fight, and George Zimmerman shot and killed Trayvon Martin. The police could not arrest Zimmerman because of this Florida law called Stand Your Ground, which says you can kill someone if you feel threatened, even though it was Zimmerman who had pursued Martin throughout the neighborhood with a gun.
Clip from the Ava DuVernay documentary, 13th. Now, to be clear, Stand Your Ground is not just a law in the state of Florida. Other states have similar Stand Your Ground policies, either in their state laws or even in their jury instructions. Shelby, what's the connection between ALEC and Stand Your Ground? Why did that become a priority for the organization?
Well, it didn't become a priority for the organization. As I explained before, one of the ways that models are introduced is that lawmakers can introduce them. And a Florida lawmaker introduced it, and it went through the ALEC procedure and process. Since then, this was in 2012, since then, you know, ALEC has a new CEO. We have new and different procedures. We don't even focus on those issues anymore. So we don't focus on guns. We don't focus on those type of issues. So, it went through the procedure that it went through. I completely understand. I'm a minority woman from an inner city. I completely understand how people feel and how they took that. And it also broke my heart personally.
Do we know what it was about Stand Your Ground that at the time that became a model policy for ALEC? What was it about that the members kind of latched onto?
Well, you know, this before my time, but what I can surmise just from what we know from public policy and history around criminal justice, you know, let's remember a lot of this tough on crime stuff was, I can remember growing up in Detroit in the 90s, and a lot of this was pushed by, you know, Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton and Democrats and Republicans, the idea that you needed to be, quote unquote, tough on crime. And since then, people have, you know, through research, through engaging with different ideas, through data, we've learned that that's not necessarily always the best solution, which is why different models and policies and research has been done, and you've been able to get to new bipartisan changes with our criminal justice system, like the First Step Act.
I want to give Lisa a chance to respond to that in just a minute. We have to pause, but I will come back to you in 1 second. Lisa, the co-director of Documented, and Alex Shelby Emmett. We'll also get to some more of your topics and questions as well, including from Rona. Rona emailed, "Why should we need a private intermediary to create public laws? If our government were working as it should, we shouldn't need it." Interesting point. How should our government be working? Are you cool with organizations like ALEC helping your lawmakers set policy? And if not, what would be a better alternative? And how do you get to that? Stay close.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Hinge. Hinge is the dating app that's designed to be deleted. It's for people who want to get off dating apps. Show off your personality with icebreaker prompts and see who likes you so you can easily start a conversation. On Hinge, 3 out of 4 first dates lead to second dates. And they're the #1 dating app mentioned in the New York Times wedding section. Download Hinge in the Apple Store or Google Play.
Our Up First team goes to work while you're sleeping. That way you wake up to the freshest take on the day's news. It's the 10-minute morning news podcast from NPR. Listen to Up First on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back now to our conversation with Shelby Emmett and Lisa Graves. Lisa, let me give you a chance to react to Shelby's last comment, and then we'll keep going with more audience questions.
Thanks, Joshua. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I documented the actual history of that Stand Your Ground legislation. And what we know is that the NRA lobbyists took that bill to an ALEC meeting, a closed door session in Texas that was co-chaired by Walmart, at the time the biggest retailer of bullets in the world and the biggest seller of rifles. And it was voted on by corporate members and ALEC legislators to make it a national model. That's how that bill moved forward, was at the NRA's urging. And while ALEC has touted the fact that it's not currently one of its models, ALEC has done nothing to get those bills repealed across the country, the bills that it helped push into law. And that's the case with voter ID and other measures as well. And so you have a situation which ALEC wants to distance itself from the past without actually doing any repair of those measures. And then in the current context, a number of the ALEC legislators in the states have been accused of sexual harassment or sexual misconduct. ALEC has been silent on those. I think ALEC hides when it sees controversy does a lot of PR spin.
And with regard to the NRA and the Stand Your Ground, how do we know about this? What's the evidence for that?
Well, I went through and found open records material that we obtained. We also went through historical records, archives of lawmaker databases, and I've got the material to show exactly how that bill moved through Florida and how it was introduced at the ALEC meeting that the NRA introduced it, and also that Walmart co-chaired the meeting at the time. So there's ample documentation. You can find out more at ALEC Exposed. You can also find out materials through documented.net and some of our reporting on theintercept.com.
Shelby, before we keep moving.
Well, I first want to address the issues of sexual harassment. As a woman, as a woman who works in an organization ran by a female CEO, that's just quite disgusting. We are an organization. We're not legislators' parents. And if they did act in a ridiculous, horrific way towards women or anybody else, they should be held accountable through that by their voters in their states and by their constituents. But to be a female and to work under a female CEO, that's just despicable that she would say something like that, quite frankly.
Tom wrote this quote about ALEC from former Wisconsin Governor Tommy Thompson. The quote is, "I always loved going to meetings because I always found new ideas, and then I'd take them back to Wisconsin, disguise them a little bit, and declare that it's mine." I'm interested in that quote, Shelby, particularly because there are a number of lawmakers who have spoken very openly about how much they love ALEC. Senator Rick Scott, who is Florida's former governor, now a senator representing Florida, had this to say about why he thinks ALEC is important. And this is from a YouTube video on ALEC's YouTube channel.
I know that with less regulation, more good things happen. We've been able in Florida to cut 5,500 regulations. And with that, we've had unbelievable prosperity. Now in D.C., I'm going to do my best to make sure that Washington quits telling us what to do. We should let our states make their own decisions. We need to have laboratories. Now, I want to make sure Florida's the best laboratory, of course. But, you know, ALEC's doing a great job, and thanks for all your hard work to make sure that we keep states' rights and we don't continue to have the federal government try to take over all of our rights.
That's Florida Senator Rick Scott, who previously represented Florida as its governor. Shelby, what's your take on the appeal of ALEC to lawmakers?
Sure. I think what the appeal is look at happening in D.C. right now, right? They're not functional. And the states are the places where innovation can take off, is what we discussed earlier, that so much attention is focused on D.C., but the majority of particularly your domestic policy happens at the state level, whether that's education, criminal justice, college campuses. all of these things usually, and for the most part, are funded, appropriated, and dealt with at your state level. So it's imperative for state lawmakers to be able to come together and either learn from a state that did something horrifically wrong, or learn from a state that did something the right way and maybe tweak it a little bit to fit their own way. To address the quotes that were just used, he said exactly what it is that we do. We are for limited government, we are for free markets, and we are for federalism, we are for states' rights. We believe at the end of the day, the states, 9 times out of 10, can do it better than the federal government. And I think that's kind of demonstrating itself right now down the street from us.
With regards to the influence, though, I am still trying to kind of suss out where the line should be, if even there is one answer to that, between the public sector and the private sector. I mean, Lisa mentioned that documentary, United States of Alec, the PBS documentary. I want to play a clip from that documentary with regards to the prison population, which has grown dramatically in recent decades. According to a report last year from the Prison Policy Initiative, there are about 2.3 million people incarcerated in America's legal system. That's the largest prison system in the world. In this clip from the documentary, a member of the private sector representing the American Bail Coalition said this when speaking on criminal justice reform at an ALEC event.
I'm not so crazy as not to know that you've already figured out that if I can talk you into doing this bill, my clients are going to make some money on the bond premiums. But if we can help you save crime victims in your legislative district and generate positive revenue for your state and help solve your prison overcrowding problem, you don't mind me making a dollar.
A clip from the PBS documentary United States of ALEC, that is a private sector member speaking on criminal justice reform at an ALEC event. Shelby, I'm sure you can understand how some people would hear that clip and go, ugh. Something about that just viscerally for a lot of folks feels wrong.
Oh, I can definitely understand that. I think, you know, all clips are taken in context and you're going to clip and choose the what you want and not the whole thing. I think that's...
Well, but let's bear in mind, this is a member of a company that works for a prison organization talking to lawmakers saying, hey, it's okay if I make a buck on some law, right? And I don't think that that is a matter of a news organization taking a clip out of context. There is something that feels inherently unfair about a big, rich private corporation having more power over my lawmakers than the dude who voted him in.
Well, again, they don't have, quote unquote, more power over the lawmakers. At the end of the day, any bill that would go to the state still has to go through that process.
But I don't get the ear of those lawmakers. I can't wine them and dine them for a weekend. Like, these corporations can do things through your organization that I will never, ever have the power to do, ever.
Well, I would first say to that, this is why we fight so hard for freedom of speech and freedom of association. Nothing's stopping you or anybody else from creating an organization similar to ALEC that stands for whatever principles you'd want in order to do those things. Most nonprofit organizations
in the country.
Time,
money, influence, there are plenty of things that would stop the average person.
Everybody from Planned Parenthood to the healthcare industry to everybody else is always meeting with people. ALEC doing it versus other nonprofits, it seems, why is it okay for one group but not the other? This is the whole point. At the end of the day, regardless of what policies are introduced and become ALEC model policy, still has to go through the democratic process in each state. And it is open and that is transparent. And people, as citizens, we all have a duty just as much to watch the watchdogs in D.C. We also have a duty to do that at our state level. And one of the best parts that, you know, I get from working within my organization is I get to work with lawmakers that generally are committed to those principles of limited government and free speech. And they have contentious debates and they don't agree on everything. And it's not lockstep. And everyone's agreeing and disagreeing and coming up with new ideas and different policy solutions. And it's not just this mill of the run where, you know, some quote unquote corporation comes in and tells people what to do. I think that's quite disrespectful to the everyday lawmakers we have in this country that are only in session for 30 to 90 days a year and then actually go back and live in their real world.
I know we got to go in just a minute, but Shelby, I wonder what is next for ALEC?
we're really focused on things like association and free speech and the great work we've been doing over criminal justice reform. And it's really great to know that someone that spends so much time, quote unquote, investigating Alec can really only focus on things from 2012 and before. And we're just so focused on the future, and we're excited about that.
I'm focused on the future and Alec's destructive agenda for our future, including its opposition to doing anything meaningful about climate change and more. So we're future.
Well, I hope to have you
That's
at our next
Lisa
meeting,
Graves,
Lisa.
Co-director of Documented. Lisa, thanks very much for speaking to us.
Thank you so much, Joshua.
And Shelby Emmett, the director of Alec Center to Protect Free Speech. Thank you, Shelby.
Thank you so much.
Today's conversation was produced by Morgan Givens and edited by Miranda Fulmore. You can learn more about them and the rest of our team online at theoneA.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Friday News Roundup. This is 1A.